This is 3 a.m. thoughts. These are the thoughts that we have at the odd hours of the night when nothing else is there to arouse our interests. Those deep subconscious things within our heads that we don't really want anyone else to hear. And you know what? We're going to talk about them. Welcome to 3 a.m. thoughts with Chevy and at times Matt.
Hi.
When he chooses to join in. But he's usually always here. So, as awkward as this might be, and don't expect me to talk with confidence or high self-esteem, because part of this podcast is because we do not have high self-esteem, so I'm getting out those thoughts. Welcome to 3 a.m. Thoughts. Thank you. How do you feel about yourself on the inside? Not what you tell other people, or what you show other people, but how you feel about yourself by yourself. If you were to spend 5 hours alone in a room, at the end of that session, that 5 hours, what would you think about yourself? We all have thoughts on this, whether we want to admit it or not, and a lot of us try not to think about it. I myself suffer from incredibly low self-esteem. There are certain things and methods I can use to bring it up, bring it down. Well, I wouldn't want to bring it down, but at the same time, some of us like watching tragedy movies. Some of us enjoy Shakespeare. I myself enjoy doom metal sometimes, which is very depressing. And sometimes we like lowering our level of happiness.
Some of us actually like to, you know, hear positive music, you know, as an upbeat, something that's got a good beat to it to bring us more of that happy vibe, I guess you could say.
I myself also enjoy such things. I like all forms of music, many at least. But right now, tonight, I'm going to talk about, and it is 2:24 a.m., by the way. This is 3 a.m. thoughts, so I only record this in the deepest, darkest hours of the night when I'm certainly not sober, but sober enough to yet record. So,
yes, you are.
So my self-esteem wavers. It is generally on the lower side. And it depends on the level in which I feel loved. If I feel unloved, if I feel like I'm alone or unloved, my self-esteem is low. If I feel like I am valued and appreciated, my self-esteem is higher. If I have accomplished something, my self-esteem is higher. So what determines your self-esteem? I believe that it starts with childhood. As we are born, as we grow into toddler years, the three-year-old phase, the terrible twos, the treacherous threes. So we start to develop who we are as a person. We really start to realize and who we are and take advice from our parents. If we see depression all day long, if mommy or daddy is depressed all day long, then as we grow older, we will develop a sense of low self-esteem. If mommy or daddy has a heightened self-esteem, if they feel good about themselves and they display it, that will raise us to be more happy about ourselves. It also depends on how our parents treated us. This is the very basics, the foundation of this. The parents is only so much, though. For me, and I believe for a lot of people, it really depends on how we were treated by our peers in the developmental years. So, Matt, for example, when you think about, what's the earliest year that you remember?
Oh, my goodness. I'd have to say early childhood, I'd say between the ages of, I'll say 6 or 7 to,
well, to
10.
Modern.
Well, between the ages of 6 and 7, age, that's young, to about 10 years old. And then moving forward on that one, I had kids that were my peers at that, around those ages, that were just straight up cruel and vicious to me. Always name calling, always taking my bike away, always throwing crab apples at me. You know, it was a real, like, awakening, like, in its own sense of where do I fit on these chains of commands, or I guess you could say, of who the boss is, or the alpha, I guess you could say, in layman's terms.
So I have a similar experience, and while this is in no way a pity party here, I'm going to share a similar experience. My family moved from my hometown to a mountainous region town in Maine, Western mountains, where it was very close knit and the people were rather more primitive there. And yes, I was subject to rigorous bullying because I was different. I was put on ADHD medication at a young age, and ADHD medication affects me uniquely. While it does help my focus, it also creates more hyperactivity in me. So I was chastised a lot, made fun of a lot. I honestly blocked out most of it. I don't even really truly remember the exact experiences. I just know that it was pretty awful. I did have a few friends though, but I was never those friends' best friends.
Same here.
I've never had anybody in their whole life call me their best friend. And those early years of childhood, dating back to when we were, in my case, it was 7+, about 7 to 9. I lived in Range, New Maine, from ages 7 to 9. At age 9, right before I turned 10, we moved back to my hometown of Bath, Maine, and continued life, and life started anew. But then came middle school. In middle school, that's where it really started. So I was, once again, subject to intense bullying. Honestly, I probably brought it upon myself. I was a weird kid. And honestly, in the ages of adolescence, there is no room for weirdness. If you are different, if you are not an athlete or a popular kid, then you are ridiculed. But I honestly really believe that even the most geekiest of nerds did not endure what I had to. I was outed as bisexual at the age of 13, right the first day of eighth grade, first day of school that year.
13 years old, really?
Yeah.
Oh man!
I knew myself pretty young.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a long story, but so I was called some pretty bad names. Faggot is definitely one of them. Creep, weirdo, and you know what? I blocked out most of it. That's about all I can remember. I just know that I did have a couple friends, but it was really hard for me to make new friends. So this developed in me a lifelong sense of not belonging that never quite went away. And as I grew older into high school years, I embraced it, because what can you do? I mean, if you can't fight them, join them, right? So no, I didn't join them. I became what they told me I was. So I developed an interest in heavy metal music and all things unusual. And I displayed that in my dress code, my clothing, and my mannerisms. And I basically adopted a do not approach me attitude and image. And you know what? It kind of fucking worked.
Didn't work for me.
Well, you honestly, mate, you're so attractive. You just like the glam. Where I wanted to be ignored, you wanted to be seen as something special.
I did. But it wasn't always like that, you know, from grade school, you know, being picked on because I was, you know, different, as they called back then, or special.
Weird, it was called.
I got that one too. I know that one. And then through middle school to high school, I got, you know, hey, look, there's the fairy. Hey, look, there's the bag. Hey, guess what? Baba Booey.
I'm really sorry that happened to you.
It made me stronger. It really made me stronger. My guidance counselor, Brenda Clark, if you ever listen to this, God bless you, woman. You were just a kick-ass guidance counselor. She literally took some of the bullies from high school, had them look in a definition of what the word was, could not remember to this day. This took the kid, sat him down, look at that definition, read it to me. Next thing you know, he read it, she goes, that's exactly what you're doing. Quit being this.
That is excellent. I had a good guidance counselor, but nowhere near that level. So for me, I'm not going to lie, high school was like a restart for me. Between the grades of 8 and 9, 8th grade and 9th grade, my family moved out of state into the Midwest, and then we rejoined. We went back home. And all of a sudden, hey, the Barters are back. Brian's back. In my case, my name is Chevy, by the way, but when I tell stories, I'll use my real name. I prefer to be referred to as Chevy. So, thank you. I appreciate that. It's Shevy. It's nothing to do with the car. So it was like a restart for me. And I embraced a new lifestyle, a new look and image. And I tried to, like I said, have this do not approach me image. And it kind of worked. I was left alone and I was respected. However, I didn't have any friends. So I pretty much had like all my friends in middle school, though. Let's rewind a bit here. In middle school, the ages of 11 through 13, grades 6 through 8, I was basically treated by my friends as the fifth wheel of the group. I was there because they allowed me to be, I felt. I felt like I was not given proper status.
Okay.
I wasn't given status amongst my social circle, even though we were the odd ones. My whole group, like we had the overweight punk rocker. We had the underweight goth kid. And then there was me, and it was kind of there. Amongst other, there's also the I don't give a fuck attitude kid, who was very polite when you get to know him, but he could be very offsetting at first if you didn't know him very well. And then I was the awkward one. I've always been the awkward one. And I guess I think it's because of what happened when I was in elementary school in Rangeley, I felt like I could not speak up for myself. And in general, even then, I just acted weird.
Well, I remember during middle school to high school, I was known as the weird one. I was the one that was very femme. Could you tell?
And you're so attractive doing it.
Oh, darling, please. But thank you. I appreciate that compliment. Thank you. Teachers would defend me from the bullies here. My guidance counselor defended me. I actually, from 10th grade to senior year, I moved from Springfield, Virginia, of Robert E. Lee High School to...
You went to Robert E. Lee High School?
I did. Springfield, Virginia.
No, they changed the name of that.
Did they?
Yeah, because General Lee was a Confederate general in the Civil War, and he was a general fighting against the freedom of slaves. So I believe they changed it. At least it was a big issue for a while. Actually, I'm impressed that you went there. That school itself was a big hot button issue for a while, but a few years ago. Anyway, continue on.
Thank you. My sisters, Kim and Amy, actually went to this high school as well as Key Intermediate School.
We don't need to say everybody's names, though.
I know we don't here, but still, not that we're giving last names here, so
let's just say anyway.
Some recommendations, I guess.
Continue on.
Moving forward, following the footsteps from 10th to senior year, I went to Cedar Crest High School in a very small farming town of Lebanon, Pennsylvania. Now, this school was just jocks, rednecks, or I shouldn't say rednecks, farmers, I guess you could
be rednecks. Nice.
Okay, fine, as you wish. And
hey, I love some of those guys. Some of those rednecks were my best friends. I don't judge them for it, but we have entirely different political views, different mindsets, and there's nothing wrong with that. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion, to their own views. But you know what? I'm sorry, that's what I call them, because if I could be called a goth, a weirdo, a fag, then I can call them rednecks. And you know what? That's resentment, and it's subservient, and I hold it. Yep, there it is. Take it or leave it, bitch.
I mean, they never really bothered me, but the jocks always bothered me.
The worst.
Of course, you know, pick on the weakling here. Okay, fine. Well, of course, you know, you had the special ed classes, and, you know, they started picking on me here, so finally one day I just sat there and fought back. Man, did they go running.
How did you fight back?
Not that I really got into, like, a fist fight or anything like that. It was the name calling. My boyfriend at the time of 11th grade, we broke up, and...
I had a boyfriend the same year, too.
Well, I was a junior, he was a freshman. Surprise, yeah, I know, when young.
Ooh.
I know, taboo.
Defiling of young. I was a junior with a 19-year-old.
Well, he was quite young, I'd say, like, 16. And,
he was a 16-year-old freshman?
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm very smart now, buddy.
Nah, not really.
No offense, but... Anyway, see, that's me trying to boost my own self-esteem. I was very good in school.
I, however, just was hoping to pass here, and thank God I did. But they're sitting there, and broke up, and cutting through the library and going up the hallway, and next thing you know, they're name-calling me left and right, and my God, I swear I about stood dead where I stood.
Did they name call you because you broke up or because they just found out that you had been in a gay relationship?
It was more the fact that they could tell, just like body mannerism, the way I was walking, swish, swish.
So you showed it off, you owned it.
I owned it, yeah. But I was just, this one day, just really sad, really depressed, you know, I'm bawling my eyes out. And Next thing they're like, hey, fag, blah, blah, blah. Next thing I stopped in my tracks, turned around and said, motherfucker, say that shit to my face.
And what happened?
Oh, they went running like little schoolgirls.
Did they really?
Oh, did they? I was like, what's the matter? What's the matter, huh? You gonna let the little fairy bop you on the head?
Okay, so I have a similar story. Starting in sixth grade, I got very fed up with a certain bully. And my mother gave me a wonderful piece of advice. She said, put your foot against his shin, stomp on his foot, your foot. Well, that's the start of it, in my opinion, in my mind. So as I did, as she suggested to this bully in gym class, sorry, this was recess. And in sixth grade, it was the last year of recess we ever got. It was held in the gymnasium at my middle school. And I put my foot on his shin, scraped it as hard as I could against someone's foot, and punched him in the face at the same time. It was actually more on the side of the head. And thus started my anti-bully phase, where anybody that made fun of me, I would physically assault them. And I never once got in trouble for it. Another kid, I elbowed him in the stomach because he was mocking me in an assembly line walking down the hallway to recess. God forbid, recess. That's where kids...
You don't mess with kids.
Recess is where bullies flourish. Uh-huh. And I let them do it long enough. And actually, I took it for less than a whole year, less than 1 year. And I started beating him up. I was walking home from school one day, and this kid that had been bullying me since fifth grade continued to do so. I'm behind him. I'm riding my little scooter because I'm like 11 or 12 years old. And he turned around to face me. He kicks hand at me. And I was waiting for one little thing to happen. And when he kicks hand at me, I took my scooter. I whacked him in the shin with it, once again the shin, and kicked him as hard as I could in the nuts.
Good for you.
Only time I've ever kicked a kid in the nuts. He keeled over, dude. Like, he was rendered helpless. It was very empowering. Then I made one grave mistake, though. At the end of seventh grade, one kid, I thought he'd grabbed my bike tire as I'm riding past him on the way home from school. Just left the school, just right up the road. And I thought he'd put his hand on it because my bike shunted to a stall. I'm not sure what the word is, but it came to a halt. And so I got off my bike and he walked past and I stupidly did a half-ass kick to the calf. I think he actually grew up to be gay. I have reasons to believe so. But he was very strong, very muscular for a 12, 13-year-old. And he turned around and faced me and he punched me in the nose and gave me a bloody nose. And luckily, my father's apartment was right up the road from the school, and I ran off like a little coward. And you know what? The next day, people started making rumors that I beat up him. I'm very honest. I cannot accept something about me that's not true, whether it is good or bad. I corrected them. I said, no, I didn't. I did not beat him up. He gave me a bloody nose. Yeah, but we're going to say you did. I'd rather you not, I said. I failed. I lost that fight. And that is... I put my self-esteem aside for the sake of honesty, where I had been gaining self-esteem because I was injuring these bullies, and I continued to do so in high school when it happened, but it was few and far between. I would not be willing to accept something that was a lie about me because that alone also hurt my self-esteem. If I was living a lie, that would hurt my self-esteem deeply. So anyway, I believe that these early years really formed our self-esteem as adults. Many of us can change and gain lots of friends, become popular as adults. We can become the star of our workplace, the lead bowler in our bowling club, as they used to be back in the fucking 80s, right?
You ever take bowling lessons?
Lessons? No, I used the fucking sidebars, man.
Oh, okay.
I like to get drunk and bowl. Yeah, sure. I love to get drunk and bowl. Done it plenty of times. But let's make that a goal of ours.
The drunken bowl.
Drunken bowling. Most bowling alleys have a bar.
Sure, why not? Let's do it. I haven't done bowling for a while. Hey, look, that's a roller skating.
Hey, we just made plans. Sweet. So anyway, the point is that you may be deep down inside, no matter who you become, you'll always have, I believe, that inner feeling of low self-esteem. So that inner feeling of low self-esteem will exist within you, and if you don't find a way to release it or understand it and basically make peace with it, then it will always be there. I myself have not made peace with it. I'm aware of it and I made friends with it, but I've not made peace with it. I sometimes embrace my low self-esteem and I learn coping mechanisms. And you know what? They're not always the healthiest ones. I cannot guarantee that I'm going to have a healthy coping mechanism. Matt, without saying what they are, what's your opinion on your coping mechanisms?
My coping mechanism?
Don't say what they are. Just tell me about, tell me how you utilize them.
Through stress, I'll use them. What's another one?
Overworking yourself.
That too.
You work the self, you work yourself to feel better about yourself.
I do actually. I dive into work, just to kind of, I guess, make the pain go away. Is that the term I'm trying
it's
to use?
It's intense, but it's right. I'm the same way. It makes it so we don't think about it. It distracts us, and it makes us feel good about ourselves because we're being productive. We're making money. We're doing something that we're being paid to do. We're doing what is expected of us. Maybe a lot of us, if it did come from their parents, we were not doing what they wanted us to do. Maybe we were not what they expected or hoped for, wished for. And so low self-esteem can come from a lack of admiration and respect from our parents that we so deeply desired. I can admit that's happened to me in some extent. I have decided I'm going to try to lean away from the parental subject for this episode, for the most part. But if that's deep for you, Matt, I think you should vocalize it. I myself.
Well, okay. I guess growing up, being told that, you know, I'm adopted, so not knowing who my birth parents are, I am one where, as I got older, my adopted parents were telling me, you know, hey, you're adopted, you have, you know, a biological brother living God only knows where at the time when I was growing up. Finally found him, and it was like eight years old, fourth grade, and he's living out in Salt Lake City, Utah. What a place, people. You think it's a flat, dry land? Nope, it's a big bowl. Just mountains. But, had that done and everything, and let's see. And coming up to, you know, my age now, my wonderful partnership here is, you know, helping me get through, like, you know, the abandonment issues of, you know, my biological parents being adopted, my parents finally, as I'm recognizing them, of who mom and dad finally are, they divorce and they both remarry. And having
my parents did not remarry, sorry to interrupt. My parents did not remarry. And I think if they had, it would have made a massive impact on me. But luckily, I guess I was spared that, sadly, for my parents. My father almost did. But continue on.
I left off here. Thank you, Chevy. You know, just kind of going through all this here, and as an adult here, you know, my late 20s to early 30s or mid-30s, something like that.
You are how old now?
Older than dirt some days.
You are 40 going on 35.
Oh,
33.
You're too kind. Thank you. And dealing with another family member that is, you know, trying to re-raise me from, you know, whatever age it was, we'll say 30s, to 12. So to re-educate me, regroup me. And
how so?
Well, more the fact of, like, you need a job. You need a career. You got to do this. You need something you can fall back on.
She's right.
She was. She was very right here. And God bless her. Rest in peace here. And just about 2 weeks ago, this woman already.
So you managed to stay with family late into life. I was forced to move and find my own apartment at the age of 20, which is not irrational. It's reasonable.
No,
I had already known how to learn on my own, but that's for another episode. I learned how to take care of myself at a very young age.
Yeah, that's another episode.
But I do want to say, though, forgive me for interrupting into my podcast. I love you. I got a cigarette. I had to roll a cigarette. I got it. I'm happy. I want to talk about coping mechanisms. If we have low self-esteem and it filters into our adult years, what do we develop as coping mechanisms? So there are many healthy and many unhealthy coping mechanisms. And
there are.
And honestly, I think that a lot of us have mostly unhealthy. As millennials, we are a unique generation. that we found our, we saw our parents using unhealthy coping mechanisms, because that's what it really became acceptable, among society, amongst adults, to drink, smoke, and do drugs. We saw it happen and we, adopted it. I drink a lot of alcohol. I smoke marijuana. I smoke a tremendous amount of cigarettes. Ask my employer; she'll tell you all about how many cigarettes I want to smoke. I cannot. Whenever I feel stressed, anytime I feel stressed, my immediate gut instinct is to light up a cigarette.
I'm the same way.
However, I do believe that my intensive smoking might have increased yours, because when I first met you, you did not smoke many cigarettes.
I didn't smoke that much, but
I was very impressed.
Well. So was I.
It was attractive to me that you smoked, but you smoked less than I did. You smoked a minuscule amount, and I found that very attractive. And you had self-control. One thing I've always lacked is self-control. And because
You have it when you want it.
No, it's not when I want it. It's when I'm capable of it. See, I always, when I feel bad, and I feel bad multiple times a day, every day, except for a few random good days. There are some days where I just feel good all day long. And those are rare. But those most days, there's always a period or periods where I do not feel okay. And my main instinct is to, first, smoke a cigarette. But two, what will change my state of mind? I was an opiate addict for many years. I was addicted to oxycodone, hydrocodone, heroin, whatever opiate I could get my hands on. I never used a needle. I snorted it. It's a thing of my past. I had a relapse recently, about this month last year, and I'm not going into that right now because it's one of my most personal issues, because something very bad happened out of it. Something very traumatic happened because of it. However, though, her.com.
As she would say.
You're welcome. I still have unhealthy coping mechanisms, and my immediate gut instinct when I feel upset is to change my state of mind. I don't want to feel bad. My self-esteem is low. I feel badly about myself. Therefore, I want to feel happy, because I don't want to wallow in self-pity or depression. Depression is not fun. Low self-esteem often results in depression. It took me a long time to realize I was depressed. Either way, though, when I felt those feelings, I denied them. I said, I can't feel this way. I cannot feel this way. If I do, I'm failing. I'm failing myself. Nobody ever told me I had to be happy. I told me I had to be happy. I wanted it to be happy. I knew what it was like to be so depressed, the college days, ages 18, 19, and so depressed. And yet I had a way to cure that. I did a lot of drugs in college, forgive me. And I had a way to cure that and make myself happy no matter what. And so I would change my brain chemistry. And I'm now realizing as I get older that there are ways to change my brain chemistry at that time, like change my frame of mind, I should say. To change my frame of mind naturally, it's very hard. It usually involves a podcast, like as guided listening, guided therapy, self-therapy, or some form of music. And what do you do, Matt?
Me?
When you feel your self-esteem plummet, what's your reaction?
Oh my goodness, blow up.
you tend to get angry.
I get angry, I blow up, I try to vent off steam as best I can, but sometimes it's not always the proper way, and I admit that I have that one issue.
So you respond in anger. Now, why would one person respond to low self-esteem that they're feeling with either wallowing in it, like listening to doom metal, i.e., or trying to make themselves happier, versus getting angry at the people around them, whether they deserve it or not? I'm not blaming anybody. Just what was the mindset behind this? So my mindset is that I enjoy happiness. I have felt, whether through substances or not, I have felt true bliss, true happiness. And some of it comes from sex. Some of it comes from cuddling. When you snuggle with your partner, you release what's called oxytocin. Also happens when you have sex. It is the brain's natural get me high chemical. It is a natural high when your brain releases oxytocin. It's something that cannot be duplicated by any drug. It is just natural in your brain, and it's released when you are truly blissfully happy. Excuse me. And when I get, for example, I like to be the little spoon. I admit a lot on this podcast. Go ahead. I like to be spooned by Matt, who is the big spoon. And when that happens, I always
the euphoria of it. It's yes, just it's one euphoria. Where you release these how do you call it?
Oxytocin.
Oxytocin. Yes. And 5-10 minutes, if that, out like a light.
If I'm tired, oh yeah, it'll put me to sleep. Because sometimes my brain will flood itself with oxytocin, and it's so much that I literally fall into a slumber, because I'm just that high naturally from my natural chemicals in my brain. Certain people don't notice they feel this. I actually had to Google this to find out even what it was.
Do you remember where you found this on the web, on Google, by chance?
I don't remember the website, but I Googled. My search query was, why do I fall asleep when I'm cuddled? Because I do. I fall asleep. Not always, but a lot of times I do. And it's because of a tremendously high level of oxytocin being released from my brain. And once again, we reached the 30-minute mark on Anchor. I love Anchor by Spotify. Thank you so much for letting me play my podcast and share it to the world. The 30-minute mark is really irritating.
No kidding.
So where have we even left off on this?
Pretty much you were going over, if I remember correctly, I believe you were...
We were talking about how to define us as adults. So anyway, I want to change topic anyway. I'm going on a new subject here where... In regards to self-esteem, this can be applied to anything, like anything, but this can be applied to self-esteem too. It's a subject matter that most people are unfamiliar with. It is a manner of thinking called forward thinking. Basically, it is progressive thinking where you want to change. You are changing yourself. I myself had very low self-esteem, and I was alone for 3 months, and to most people, that is nothing. To me, as a codependent who had never lived on his own before, never been alone before, it was a massive change, and I never truly adapted to it. But I started to develop forward thinking, where I'm progressing into myself, and I learned about myself, and I'm like, okay, I'm alone whether I like it or not. And I have low self-esteem, I don't like myself, I cry too much, I cry at work, I cry at home, I listen to sad music. Now, what can I do to change this? So I started developing strategies to make myself happier. Certain types of food, even DoorDash by myself, all alone. I ordered myself DoorDash. My roommate is capable of doing the same thing. He prefers his solitude, and he does the same thing. He orders his own food. I myself was not used to that. I was used to cooking for a family. I lost my children to their mother in May of last year. I broke up with my girlfriend of a long time. Was mutual the following month, less than 30 years later. And losing my children was my biggest failure I've ever had in my life. So I started seeing my children on my own. I found my neighbor could babysit, and I had rides a little bit from my ex-girlfriend's friend and my ex-wife. I do not drive anymore because of a failure. I have such an extensive driving record in a negative way that I lost my license, quote unquote, indefinitely suspended. However, though, forward thinking. So what I'm reading here on simplicable.com is telling me that forward thinking consists of 7 primary aspects. The first one is optimism. If you're optimistic, you're going to have more positive self-esteem. It's as simple as that. It just is. Good self-esteem is based on optimism, which is that you have good feelings about your future. And I did. I was rejected so many times on those stupid dating apps, but you know what? I let it get me down for a minute, and then I recovered. I said, I'm better than them anyway. If they don't think I'm worth their time, then they're not worth my time. And I'm a codependent, so being alone was really hard for me, but I learned this set of thinking. I recovered very, very, very rapidly from all my rejections, and thought that, you know what, they weren't right. They weren't right for me to begin with. I want the one that's right for me. If they're going to reject me that easily, without even meeting me in person, then God forbid I had met them.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank God I didn't meet them. I'm way better than that. And that is optimistic thinking. That's a form of forward thinking. And I will be the right person. Okay. The next one is investment. Okay. Now this mostly means towards money, but I'm thinking of investment in a different way. I put investment into my true friendships. The friendships that really matter to me, the ones that people that made a difference in my life as friends. Most of them do not exist in person. My best friends are through online or cell phone communication only, and that's okay. I have my one friend, my best friend in real life, my roommate. I will hold his name for privacy's sake. But said roommate was a massive help to me when he was here. He was not here so much last summer. Some people just like to go out and party.
He loves the sun.
I also think it might have been a form of quarter life crisis. But that quarter life crisis is another episode. That's going to be my next episode if I remember this. If I remember it, the quarter life crisis is my next topic. However, though, so I invested in my friends. Prediction. Predict the future. I knew I'd find someone. I fully believe that. For a while, I didn't. For a while, I did not. I had a mental breakdown in August of 2021 where I was at work and we closed down. I'm the last one to finish my job with what I do. That's normal. And with only two coworkers there, one being my roommate and best friend, who's also my coworker, and my supervisor. In this case, that supervisor, I felt I could confide in. And I had all my coworkers buy me my drinks because it was my birthday.
Yeah. Happy late birthday for that one.
My birthday's coming up again soon.
Yes, I know.
So I had not had my birthday celebrated in many years. I had also missed my psych med for three nights in a row. Mm-hmm. Three nights. And all of a sudden, every coworker, that being seven of them, bought me a shot.
Oh,
it was great. That's the first time my birthday had been celebrated since I was probably 20 years old, 21. It felt amazing. But that feeling of gratitude, the feeling of getting gifts, it became too much, and I felt I didn't deserve it. I self-sabotaged. And I waited until they all left, except for those two people, and I mentally broke down and had a full mental breakdown in front of them.
Oh, my God.
And I thought I would never find anybody in my life. If I hadn't by now, I thought I'd face so much rejection. I am not exactly what women look for, and I'm not what gay men look for either, typically. And Matt, I thank you, open one of my heart, for seeing who I really am, accepting me.
Always have. And to accept you is a gift. It really is. I myself, at the same time, was not looking for someone. I had gone through my past here and was not the best.
My past was full of mundane, boring, long-term relationships that went stale way too fast. I appreciate both of them. No, I'm sorry for you. I appreciate both of my long-term relationships. They taught me things, but they went mundane very fast. Anyway, so I knew I'd find someone eventually, and at the time when I found this beautiful man next to me, I had already stopped looking. Like, I decided I'm going to go stag. I deleted all my dating apps except for one. I kept Facebook Dating. It was the free dating app that was already on, an app I use every day. So I'm already part of it. So that it's no separate app. It's already right there. Right there. So why not? I mean, I'm not. I check it like once a week, you know. And I got a message. And we've been together for 7 months now. 7.5 months.
Amazing.
It really is.
Not miss, but like, wow.
It's just. Time flies.
It does.
So the next one, which is this, agent of change. An individual who shapes the future in some way. I accepted Matthew into my life, and he shaped my future. And I welcomed him in with open arms.
Very much so.
We've had times of wonderful, blissful feelings and times of great, deep sorrow together.
Yeah.
Or separate, even.
Yes, we have.
Well, we don't need to do that.
No.
I have been hurt, and maybe it's my life. So anyway, but I love you, Matt. I don't want for you to. Next one is risk management. So this is the process of identifying and treating risks. Risks are future losses that have some probability of occurring. So for example, for me, I expect my partner to betray me. I'm sorry, Matt, you know this. I always have some level of precaution, a guard up sometimes. Now, I express my full vulnerability to you, but I have a subconscious layer of armor in case I'm cheated on, or I'm left unexpectedly, I can numb myself. That is my risk management. I can numb my emotions. I cannot do this except for under extreme circumstances, and it's not conscious. It happens on its own. My emotions just disappear. I become numb. I know I'm sad. I don't feel sad.
I've had that happen.
This is what I do under extreme emotional distress. And that is my risk management, okay? That is forward thinking, actually, because it is a way of guarding ourselves against true emotional harm. The next one is resilience. A development of systems to be fundamentally resilient to stressors, such that they are likely to survive into the future. I think that's what it says. Let me move this over here. Move this page over. One moment. Yeah. The development of systems, this is from simplecouple.com. The development of systems to be fundamentally resilient to stress such as that they are likely to survive in the future. Resilience is similar to risk management, with the difference being that resilience does not anticipate specific risks, but instead adopts approaches that reduce a broad range of risks. For example, a sailboat that is designed to be extremely strong, such that its main components are practically unbreakable. This is a tough one. This is a tough one. So my resilience. So say I get in trouble at work. My resilience method, I did not expect to get in trouble at work. This was news to me as it happened. Boom, it is there. I'm my boss is not looking at me favorably. So let me work on my speech. My boss is not looking at me favorably. So as this is happening, I develop a coping mechanism and a strategy to deal with such. So that being, I'm going to work harder and get more of my tasks done, even the ones that are not necessary, but they're on the list either way. If you have time, I'm going to get them all done to prove to my boss that I really care about my job. Matt, can you think of a way that you can identify with this?
Being on the spot here, folks.
You're on the spot the whole time, honey. We are recording, girl.
Shit. I'm trying to
Time. Forgive our humor. I made you laugh. Now you're open to more forward thinking. You're less pressured now.
Silly, I'm. Thank you, though, for trying. I don't know. I can't think of one right now on the spot.
So, say I were to tell you right now that, Matt, I want you to pack up and leave. What would you do? I would never say that. But say I did.
I say, okay, fine. Bye.
Go with Scott. So your form of resilience is honestly just to give me what I don't want, but I'm saying I want, because you know I'm lying. And you're giving me that, and that would, boom, slam it back in my face. That's a good resilience method. Good job. I like that one.
Thank you, Linda.
So the last one is anticipating objections. Now, simplicable.com. Horrible name to pronounce over and over again.
Don't whistle your asses, which is a good thing. It can be more fun here.
I have no idea what you just said, and we're going to leave it at that.
We are.
So the last one is anticipating objections. Simplicable.com describes it. Oh, Matt, shut. Describes it as the practice of planning for resistance and criticism of your ideas in advance, okay, to mount a more effective defense. So if you are trying to do something and you know people are going to tell you it's wrong, you are planning for that in advance. You are anticipating others' objections. So let's say your family was raised Catholic.
Okay.
And you're gay. And you have a boyfriend and they don't know about it. You're 19 years old. This is just, I'm creating this in my head as I go. And you're 19 years old and some crazy thought says that you want to introduce your family to your boyfriend. I mean, I'm sure you all felt that way at some point, but I never did. I never wanted to introduce my boyfriends to my family. Really, I never felt connected to my family enough to introduce them to my boyfriends. They met them because I lived there. So what are you going to do, though, when you're going to introduce them to your new boyfriend with the anticipation that they're going to reject the idea? They're going to object. They're going to say this is wrong. This was against our religious beliefs. Well, you are already planning how to deal with that.
Hold my breath and pray to God.
So all this, I believe that this is all part of something called forward thinking. And I believe that all this directly ties into the issue of self-esteem. I've never heard anybody else even talk about this before. but I think that it is applicable. Applicable as however you want to fucking pronounce that word.
I know.
Applicable. I have a speech impediment. I apologize. So not as much as you think you are. Anyway, I'm getting really hungry now. So on top of self-esteem, as we grow older, we can develop new and stronger coping mechanisms to deal with our self-esteem issues. So now that we are in our 30s, you know, he's man's 40, I'm 32. We deal with them more maturely than we used to as we're younger, because we know what hurts us, we know it does not, and we know what affects others around us. Now, if my method back when I was in middle school was to hurt other people that hurt me, I would not do that nowadays, because now that would result in jail time. I would get arrested on an assault charge. It's happened before. I would get arrested on an assault charge and I would go to jail. Or do that, or I would be fired from my job, or et cetera, et cetera. I'd be alienated from my friends, the few that I actually have. You know what? It's all about how we deal with it internally now. It is how we deal with it internally as ourselves. Being alone taught me a lot, like I said. I learned to deal with my griefs, my traumas by myself.
And you've done an amazing job.
Thank you.
You really have.
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew. It means a lot. I've learned who I am as a person. I know myself. I know me. I did soul searching so deep. I did self-therapy. I understand more. I understand a lot more. And if I feel low self-esteem often, I need Matt because I'm codependent. But if I'm at work, if I'm away from Matt, at first, I stayed codependent. But then I reminded myself of all the strategies that I had taught myself. And I apply them now. And I can be comfortable just being me sometimes. Not always. But if I can really find my inner soul, really dig deep enough, I can be happy being me.
It's always there. Ain't going nowhere.
Matt, any last words?
Folks.
Technological error. Please continue, Matthew.
Oh, thank you.
Folks.
Folks, now, I have to say something here. It's through all this, one thing, if I've learned anything, keep your, how do I say it? Always express how you feel to your partner, to your friends, to your family. Because
you're welcome.
Thank you. I love you too. And talk to them. Just talk.
Don't be afraid to express your feelings.
Exactly.
Your self-esteem will improve if you express your feelings, whether they're accepted or rejected. Express those feelings and you will be understood more. Whether they're accepted or rejected, they will understand.
Exactly.
And most importantly, love yourself. That is a whole other episode for a whole other time. There's a journey of its own, and I've gone back and forth on that journey for a long time, but I have learned to love myself now more than I ever have before. And I love you, man.
Love you too, Shelby.
Love ourselves.
Love ourselves.
And love each other. Yes. Good evening. It is now 3:16 in the morning. Have a good night. We are going to sleep.
Good night.
3 a.m. thoughts. Over and out.